Greetings, everyone, and welcome to the Law Hour and Editorial Review. The Law Hour is sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. The Law Hour is an educational service in the public interest. I'm your narrator, George Gordon. Now, the Law Hour and Editorial Review is heard nationally 7 days a week here in the United States and in more than 75 countries around the world over the Internet. For more information about the Law Hour and Editorial Review, please visit our webpage at georgegordon.org. Again, that's georgegordon.org. The Law Hour and Editorial Review brings you important information about law, news, and current events. So stay tuned for tonight's special report on the contract penalty clause when we come back. You know, Charles Lyell, he was one of the pillars of modern geology, and he published his Principles of Geology back in the early 1800s. Lyell's concepts are so widely accepted today that most people who believe them don't even know who it was that originated these ideas. But it's from Lyell's system of reasoning that a doctrine of origins was devised by simply projecting all of the natural processes that we observe today back through time indefinitely. And in that way, catastrophes like Noah's flood have been strictly ruled out, and this process is called science. Well, listen to this. The sun is shrinking. That was a Newswire report, and it made this surprising statement. The sun is shrinking. The sun's diameter appears to have been decreasing by about 0.1% per century. And scientists have now, over the last 137 years, been watching, and the evidence is now conclusive. Every hour, the sun is shrinking by 5 feet. Now, if the sun is shrinking 0.1% per century, then that totals 1% per millennium. So if the sun existed only 100,000 years ago, it would have been twice as big, double its present diameter. If we projected this back 20 million years ago, the surface of the sun would be touching the Earth 93 million miles in diameter. And as far as researchers can tell, this rate of shrinkage has been consistent since the origin of the sun. Now, what did our teachers tell us about the dinosaurs' extinction? Do you remember that story? They told us that the dinosaurs died out 65 million years ago. Well, boys and girls, 20 million years ago, just watching the sun shrink at 5 feet an hour today, projecting that event back through time, 20 million years, the sun would have been 93 million miles in diameter, which is where the Earth is in its orbit around the sun today. Now, come on, kids. You don't have to be a rocket scientist to figure out that that's a pseudo-scientific lie. And that's just one more of the many examples of evolutionary propaganda that masquerades as science. And it's one more of the many lessons that I teach in my Mosaic Law School. If you'd like more information, why don't you call and order the free General Law CD package. That's a 4-hour commentary on the law in general. Remember, it's educational, it's informative, it's entertaining, and best of all, it's free. And you can call and order yours right now. The number to call, 417-273-4967. Again, that's area code 417-273-4967. Now, if you're online, you can go to our website. It's georgegordon.org. Georgegordon.org. Just click onto the email machine when you get there and then send an email request for that free General Law CD package. Again, georgegordon.org or call direct 417-273-4967. All right, we're talking about the contract. If you've been listening to this series of programs, we started off with the contract. The contract is in Exodus 19, verse 16 through Exodus 24:8, terms and conditions of the Old Covenant. And in that contract, your great-great-granddaddy, 84 generations back, said, okay, I'll buy into this program. He took the benefits that came from that contract and died. And a legal question came up. Well, who gets the toys after old granddad died? And the answer is, it inures, it passes on to the heirs and assigns That's the heirs, or if there's no heirs, somebody that he leaves in his will. Those toys, those houses and condominiums and SUVs and gold and silver and bank accounts that he has amassed forever. And how long is forever? I don't know. But I do know that it's not up yet. It's not up yet. Now that takes us down here to 2006. Now we started in 1329 B.C. Moses is up on top of the mountain. He gets this Ten Commandments law. Remember, he got that in two tables of stone, came down off the mountain, got ticked off, broke them, went back up and got another pair. Came back down off the mountain, and he wrote all this in a book. And we call this the Law of God, or the Law of Moses, the Mosaic Law. And you'll find it in the beginning of your Bible. It's in Genesis, Exodus, Leviticus, Numbers, and Deuteronomy. Genesis is more of a history book, but it's one of the five books that Moses wrote. Moses was a prophet. I'm a reporter. Moses was a prophet. Sometimes people think I'm a prophet. I'm not a prophet. I didn't prophesy any of these events. There isn't anything prophetic about George Gordon. I don't know any more than I read in the Wall Street Journal. You know, if it isn't in the paper, if I didn't see it on the CBS Evening News, well, what do I know? But there is a guy here who claims to know, and we call this guy God. Now, this guy that we call God gave this message, this prophetic information, to his servant Moses. Now, Moses, in reality, wasn't really a prophet either. If you stop and think about it, a prophet is somebody who predicts the future. Well, anybody who can predict the future would have to have the power to bring it to pass. You know, George Bush could be a prophet. He could prophesy that a nuclear bomb is going to explode in Tehran, Iran, or in Pyongyang, Korea, or something, tomorrow morning at 8 o'clock. He has the power to bring that to pass. He could actually order that. George Bush could be a prophet in his own time. But George Gordon can't do that. I can't deliver a nuclear weapon someplace in the world. I don't have that kind of power. I don't have that authority. I don't have that ability. I can't do that. Truth be known, Moses didn't have that power either. Moses has been dead for 3,000 years. Moses does not have the power to bring to pass these events that he wrote down 3,000 years ago. He didn't have the power to do it then. He doesn't have the ability, capacity, or power to do it today. But there was a real prophet. And this prophet is called God, Elohim, or Yahweh, or Allah, or Buddha, or, you know, whatever you want to hang on this guy. The God, the creator of the universe. Now, he wrote a book, and we call it the Hebrew Scriptures. And in the Hebrew Scriptures, here in Deuteronomy 28, we're covering a section here called the penal clause to the contract. We've got a contract with this guy. We got a contract. And you didn't know anything about this contract. Not only do we have a contract, but there's a penalty clause in the contract. A penalty clause. And the penalty clause is spelled out in Deuteronomy chapter 28. It's kind of a long chapter. And we've been going through that verse by verse. And then I'm up here to about verse 59 last time, 59 and 60, which talked about disease and plagues. And you got this avian flu plague on the horizon. You know, every once in a while they talk about this avian flu, you know, on the news. The Lair News Hour and Bob Schieffer and the CBS Evening News. They'll say, oh, let me bring you up to speed here on avian bird flu. Well, one of these days, like the Spanish flu of 1918, that'll become a plague, and it's going to kill a lot of people. Now, the Spanish flu killed about 50 to 100 million people. Depends on who you talk to or what books you're reading. I don't know. I wasn't there. I was before my time, and all I can do is read about it, like bubonic plague. Throughout history, God has sent plagues, And he said, the plagues that he sent upon the Egyptians, let me read this to you again. He says, moreover, he will bring upon you all the diseases of Egypt which you were afraid of, and they will cleave unto you. And also every sickness and every plague which is not written in the book of this law, like Alzheimer's disease and Lou Gehrig's disease and Parkinson's disease, diseases that aren't even mentioned here in the Bible. So I'm going to bring those diseases on you. New plagues. Plagues and diseases of long continuance. The hardest way you can imagine to die, AIDS, dementia, or Parkinson's disease, or Alzheimer's disease, Lou Gehrig's disease. I mean, God, you talk about a hard way to die. And I can't think of a harder way to die. So that's what I'm going to do to you now if you don't shape up. So I thought as a reporter, I'd come along and report about this prophecy from this prophet called God that he sent to us by his scribe or his secretary named Moses. Now, Moses wasn't the only guy who was God's scribe or secretary who wrote down prophecies. There's 30 of these prophecies that deal with this great tribulation, this end time period. 30. And I mentioned to you Isaiah and Ezekiel, and we took a look at Ezekiel chapter 18, and I went through that with you, and I said, well, you know, there's a little promise here. See? He tells you very plainly that you're not responsible for anybody else's sins but your own. Clean up your act, and I'll save you alive, and I'll kill that other guy over there for his sin. Now, that's what we call strict liability. You are strictly liable for your own sins, and you're going to pay for your own. You're not going to pay for your father's sins or anybody else's. There's no inherited sin. That's just religious poppycock. Religious poppycock. And you can forget about your immortal soul wafting off up to heaven to the gates of St. Peter, because you are a soul. And the soul that sins, it shall die. And you're a soul, and you're going to die. I mean, you know, unless you're a space case and don't understand death, you know that you're going to die. Today you're alive, and you know that there is that inevitable end time when you're going to die. Now, life is a very serious series of events. So in the last program, I mentioned some of these serious events, like the president or prime minister or premier of North Korea, Kim Il-sung. He's got the bomb. I'm not overly confident about his mental stability. The guy looks like, acts like, and behaves like a lunatic. He looks like and acts like and behaves like he belongs in a nut house. It's just my opinion, you know, I'm just an observer. Our president, George Bush, said that he belongs to what he called, this is George Bush, called the Axis of Evil. And he called that Iraq, Iran, and North Korea. Now, we'd probably be in North Korea looking for a regime change for the benefit of those poor folks up there if there was any oil in North Korea, but I don't see any oil up there, and I don't think there's going to be any regime change. But this guy, remember, has a bomb. He's got nuclear weapons now. And he looks like the kind of guy that would probably drop one of those on Long Beach, California. And that doesn't bode well. In fact, our God here in Deuteronomy 28 says that's precisely what he's going to do to us. Precisely. Boy, that don't sound good. Now we could prevent that. You know, there is a methodology here in the Bible whereby we could prevent Long Beach from getting nuked by a lunatic in North Korea, or a lunatic in China, or a lunatic in Moscow, or some other place. But we're not very likely to do that. Looking at past history and looking at just normal human nature, it's not in the tea leaves that I can see. But there have always been some individuals out there that have shaped up and saved themselves. You know, there's a guy by the name of Daniel. Remember that Daniel? He went to Sunday school, Daniel in the lion's den. Daniel was a man that obeyed God and kept his commandments. And keep in mind now, there's only 759 of these. I mean, you got 2,000 laws in your traffic code, and you got a driver's license. You agreed to practice 2,000 laws in your traffic code. Hell, you got another 2,000 in your marriage code, and you got a marriage license, remember? And then you got another 2,000 or more laws in your business code, business and professional code, and you probably have a business license. I mean, you know, you've contracted to obey thousands and thousands of laws. That's why I say I find it hard to believe when some preacher comes along and says, well, you just can't obey God and keep His commandments. You just can't practice that law. Well, we found out last time in Ezekiel 18, God said, you know, you've been a jerk, and you've been giving me the finger, but if you will repent and start practicing my laws, I'll forget about all of the crap that went on before, and I'll save you alive. But if you continue on, I'm going to kill you. I'm going to destroy you. And then he goes on here in Deuteronomy 28 and explains, here's how I'm going to carry it out. And so he's talking about disease epidemics. He's talking about a foreign country, some country that we don't understand their language. And I just can't think of another language that we don't understand any more better than Chinese, or maybe Indian, or North Korean. I find it hard to believe that the North Koreans are going to come over here and invade us, but I don't see that that's too much of a stretch of my imagination to see the Chinese doing it. Verse 62, he says, you shall be left few in number, whereas you were as the stars of heaven for multitude, because you would not obey the voice of the Eternal your God. Now that's a prophecy. There's another one just like it in about Ezekiel 4, where Ezekiel takes these hairs, you know. One-third die in war, one-third die in famine, disease, and pestilence, which follows the war, and then one-third is carried into national captivity. All right, he says, you'll be left few in number. There's 300 million people here in America. Just take a look at the number of people, 30 million in Canada, 30 million in Australia, and then diminish that by one-third, and one-third, and one-third. I mean, I didn't write this. I'm just a reporter, remember? I didn't go to seminary. I'm not a preacher. I didn't come in here to preach at you and tell you to give your heart to Jesus now today. Just here to deliver a message. Just doesn't sound good to me. And so I said, well, it looks like maybe we better make some changes here. Make some changes. Now, remember when they threw Daniel into the lion's den, the lions didn't eat him. Now, normally, lions, you know, like to eat. And after they took Daniel out of the lion's den, they threw his enemies, his accusers, into the lion's den, and the lions were hungry that day, and they ate them all. So the lions weren't full when Daniel was thrown in the lion's den. But they were held at bay by Big Mike. Daniel had three cousins, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, and Nebuchadnezzar threw them into a fiery furnace, which demonstrates that fire and lions cannot kill people if they obey God and keep His commandments. I guess I should put the proviso in, if you're under 70 years old, you know, when you get to be 70, contract expires. So if you're over 70 years old, partner, your contract has expired. You collected your 70 years, your 70 and 10, and you can go at any time. But I'm only 67, and it's against the law. It's a violation of the terms of the contract for me to die before I'm 70. So that's why I'm pretty cocky and confident. As long as I'm practicing this law, I'm not going to die. Well, not until I get to be 70. Furthermore, if I practice this law, I won't get Lou Gehrig's disease or Alzheimer's disease or a heart attack, cancer, and stroke if I practice this law. That's kind of a neat benefit, and I kind of like that. Now, remember that this contract penal clause comes in two forms. We talked about that last time. Form number one, I'm going to take your benefits away from you. I'm going to take your SUV away. I'm going to take your condominium away. I'm going to foreclose on that ARM, you know, that adjustable rate mortgage that you thought you were going to cut a fat hog in the back with and make all this profit and gain. I'm going to eat your lunch with that ARM. I'm going to take your beach house, and I'm going to send you a Hurricane Katrina, and I'll destroy what you've got. Okay, that's number one. I'm going to take away from you your benefits. It gets worse. And he says, if you can't be reformed by Hurricane Katrina, if you can't be reformed by drought in California, if you can't be reformed by foreclosure and a loss of your privileges and benefits, then here's what I'm going to do to you. And boy, that really gets nasty. So when I saw, here's what I'm going to do to you, my ears perked right up, and I said, uh-oh, this isn't good for me. I don't like this program at all. So I thought, shucks, if all I got to do is post a sign out here on my gate and come into compliance with one of those 759 laws, and then maybe quit eating pig, that'd be two, you know, that'll leave 757. Maybe if I quit crossbreeding my cattle over here, that's three. That'll leave me with 756. I got to working on this, and I said, hell, this law isn't near as bad as I thought it was. And those preachers that keep telling you that you can't practice this law, it's impossible, they're just liars, like politicians, just like George and the neocons and Dick. They just lie to you a lot. You can do this law, you know, if you put your mind to it. In fact, it might even be pretty good for you, because we found out in Ezekiel 18 that if you do it, now you haven't been doing it, but if you start doing it, God told you, he said, no, I don't take any great pleasure in the death of the wicked, but if you give me the finger now and flag me down now, I'm gonna eat your lunch. But you know, if you straighten up and fly right, and I'll make sure you get your 70 years. Now that's what I wanted to hear. That sounded pretty good to me, and I thought, well, shucks, I could buy one of those signs and stick it on my gate, and shucks, I could probably wear cotton clothes, and heck, you know, with a little work, I could probably even stay out of Flo's whorehouse. You know, tell that lot lizard to bug off. He goes on here in verse 63, says, it'll come to pass that as the Eternal rejoiced over you to do you good and to multiply you, so the Eternal will rejoice over you to destroy you and to bring you to naught. And you shall be plucked from off the land where you go in to possess it. Plucked from off the land. That's deportation. Now, that hasn't happened for a long time. Now, when we conquered Germany and Japan, we didn't pluck up the Japanese from off their land and deport them to Australia or deport them, you know, to some other place. Now, that's been done in past times. It was done to us, in fact, the Israelites. When the Assyrians conquered us in 721 to 718 B.C., they came into Palestine, and they physically took us captive into Babylon. That's why Daniel was over in Babylon. Because Nebuchadnezzar did the same thing. The Assyrians did it, and then the Babylonians did it to the Jews. Took them physically right out of their land and hauled them off. Now, this is a prophecy that has to do for the end times. Prophecy is dual in nature. And it happens once, and then it happens in a bigger, better way later. So what's happened in 718 B.C. and 586 B.C. is about to happen in this end time dual fulfillment of this prophetic event called deportation. I'm going to pluck you off the land. All right, now just picture this. Today you're living happily and satisfactorily in Los Angeles, California, commuting to and from your work and doing your thing. A foreign army comes in, and if you happen to be one of the survivors, that last third, then one of the survivors, you will be packed up and shipped off. Let me skip ahead a little bit. In the same chapter, in verse 68, the Eternal shall bring you into Egypt again with ships. By the way whereof I spoke unto you, you shall see it no more again, and there you shall be sold to your enemies for bondsmen and bondswomen, and no man shall buy you. So in verse 68, he tells you even where you're going. You're going to Egypt. I would imagine you're probably going over there to work for Enron, or Standard Oil, or Exxon, or somebody. I don't think that's very pleasant. Going to pluck you off the land in Los Angeles, ship you off to Egypt or someplace to work for your masters. That didn't sound good to me at all. But there's more. He said, verse 64, the Eternal will scatter you among all people from the one end of the earth even to the other, and there you shall serve other gods, that's other political governments, which neither you nor your fathers have known, even wood and stone. Hey, you want to serve wood and stone? Your state capitol buildings? You want to worship? You want to practice the law of the United States and New York and Canada and Australia? Fine. You can do that in Egypt, Libya, Ethiopia, Russia, and China. He says he's going to scatter us to all the nations in the world, around the world. He names Egypt, Ethiopia, and Libya in various prophecies. And here he tells you all the nations. That didn't sound good to me at all. Now, of course, there's a few survivors. And there's a prophecy over here, I think it was about 1 Kings chapter 19, as I recall. And a prophet, one of God's secretaries, a guy by the name of Elijah. He had gonads the size of grapefruit. This guy, Elijah, now this guy was something else again. Anyway, he was a little despondent one day, didn't have any Prozac, and he said, I'm the last guy in Israel to be practicing this law, and they seek my life. The king and the queen. The queen said, her name was Jezebel, she said, I won't eat until that SOB is dead. Now, you know she was serious. And old Ahab, he was kind of a dolt. You know, he was a Dagwood Bumstead, if there was ever a Dagwood. It was old Ahab over there. And he had sent out some SWAT teams to bring Elijah in. SWAT teams. Yeah, they sent out 100 guys in this SWAT team. Or was it 50? Maybe it was 50. 50 guys in this SWAT team. And they came out there, you know, with their black uniforms on, and they probably had their AK-47s or whatever they were using at the time. They surrounded Elijah's house, and a bolt of lightning came down out of heaven. Well, out of the clouds, you know, out of heaven. But a bolt of lightning came down, killed 49 of them. All but one. God was a little weak that day. Couldn't kill 50. He could only kill 49. And the one guy, he runs back to Ahab, and he said, you won't believe what that Elijah did. He ambushed us. He ambushed the whole company, the whole platoon over here, and killed them all. Except me, and I escaped, and I came back to report. So they sent out a second SWAT team, another 50 guys. Another bolt of lightning comes down, kills 49 of them. God's a little weak again, second time around. And one guy is left alive, and he goes back, and he reports. So they sent a third SWAT team out. And the third SWAT team, the guy comes up to Elijah, and he says, now listen, don't panic now. Don't go ballistic on me. He said, you relax, and I'm caught between a rock and a hard spot. The king sent me out here to bring you in, and if I fail, he'll kill me. And if I mess around with you, your God is going to kill me. We saw what happened to the other two SWAT teams, and we're convinced. You don't need to prove anything more to us. Big Mike comes over to Elijah and he says, "Hey, Elijah, you think we got their attention?" Now, just picture this: you're surrounded by 50 guys. A bolt of lightning comes down and kills 50 highway patrolmen, a bunch of SWAT team guys. And then this angel says, well, now go on with this guy and go deliver this message now to the governor for me. So Elijah did. He went in. He gave himself up, and I imagine they handcuffed him, put him in the back of the squad car, and hauled him off to the king. And he delivered this message to the king. And here's what the message was. He said, King, be it known that before the sun rises, that you and Jezebel will be killed and the dogs will be licking your blood out of the dust before the sun comes up again. How would you like to deliver that message to George Bush? Well, that's the message that Elijah had to deliver to Ahab and Jezebel. And he did. He delivered the message. And before sunrise, Ahab and Jezebel were both thrown off the wall of the city. And the dogs were licking their blood out of the dust as the sun rose the next morning. Well, Elijah wasn't feeling too good about that. And he was really bummed out, saying, he said, I'm the last man in Israel to practice this law. And Big Mike came over and he said, hey you, I have reserved 7,000 in Israel that have not bowed their knee to Baal. Well, boys and girls, I would submit to you that there's 7,000 in Australia, 7,000 in New Zealand, probably 7,000 in Canada, and I'll guarantee you there's 7,000 here in the United States that haven't bowed their knee to Baal. Maybe you're one of them. You ever stop and think about that? Hell, maybe you could be one of them. But you got to have something between your legs beside peas. You're listening to The Law Hour, an editorial review sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Now, The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States, and we're heard worldwide around the world over the Internet. For more information about The Law School and The Law Hour, please go to our website. Remember, that's georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. The Law School teaches family law, tax law, courtroom strategy and procedure, business law, agricultural law, civil rights, and biblical law from the scriptural perspective. Now, the law school is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school, and it is open to individuals by prearrangement. The law school conducts a homeschooling program for adults on compact disc. For more information, please go to our homeschooling page on our website at georgegordon.org. The Law Hour website is updated weekly. It has our radio log schedule and archives, and it can be accessed through the website. The Law Hour is carried worldwide over the Internet, and all of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date for your listening convenience. The Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest, and The Law Hour brings you timely reports on law, science, education, politics, religion, health, history, economics, news, and current events 7 days a week. The Law School offers a free 4-hour introductory CD package. Be sure to order yours. The number to call, 417-273-4967. Again, that's area code 417-273-4967. Now, the opinions, beliefs, comments, views, and expressions that you hear on this program are mine and mine alone. They don't necessarily represent the beliefs and opinions of the advertiser, sponsors, management, or staff of this network or of this local radio station. And if you'd like more information about the Law Hour and editorial review, please go to our website, georgegordon.org, or you can call us direct, 417-273-4967. All right, we are reviewing the penal clause to the contract. Penal clause, Leviticus 26 and Deuteronomy 28. Deuteronomy 28 is more detailed. It's a lot longer, got more specifics to it. And says, now here's what I'm going to do. You can just about bet. You can take this to the bank. If you're an Australian, New Zealander, and if you're a Canadian or an American, you can take this to the bank. You can put your head between your knees and kiss her goodbye. If you don't do something constructive to reverse out, you know, to protect yourself from these events. Now, when's this going to happen? Well, it didn't happen to my granddad. He died. He's in a hole in the ground waiting for the resurrection. Didn't happen to my Uncle Buster or Aunt Bessie. They all died. And it may not happen to me. Hell, I might die and be pushing up daisies by the time this thing comes to pass. But you can rest assured that before the second coming of the Messiah, this is going to occur. Before the second coming. And if you happen to be, I tell my daughter this every once in a while, she's just a kid, you know, 18 years old. I said, hey, little girl, if this doesn't happen in my lifetime, it's going to happen in your lifetime. And if it doesn't happen in your lifetime, it'll happen in your child's lifetime. Every generation should be prepared for this event. Every generation. Until it finally happens. So when the Apostle Paul was expecting the second coming in his lifetime, every generation has been expecting the second coming. My Aunt Bessie told me that when they saw the events occur in Flanders Field in Belgium in World War I, where 40,000 people, 40,000 Allied soldiers were killed in one day, they said, my God, this is Armageddon. No, no. Aunt Bessie had that wrong. Armageddon is in Israel, in Palestine. It's not in Belgium. Yeah, it was a bad war. It was what Jesus called wars and rumors of wars. It was the precursor, but it wasn't the event. Now, all of my life, I've been living through these precursors. I've been living in the period called wars and rumors of wars. We'll see that when we take a look at Matthew 24. But the end is not yet. He told us that. He said, when you hear of wars and rumors of wars, the end isn't yet. So you don't need to be concerned about this happening tomorrow morning. I know old Billy Graham, you know, he used to say, Christ could come tonight. You ever heard Billy say that? He was lying to you. Christ is not coming tonight. And hell, I'm not even a prophet. And I can tell you that as a crummy reporter. Christ is not coming tonight. And that's because these events have not transpired yet. There's another watchword. He told you in Matthew chapter 24, when his disciples asked him, they said, hey, tell us what's going to happen, you know, when you come back or when the end of the world comes. And he said, you see this temple. He said, not one stone will be left on top of another when I come back. All right, now boys and girls, over in Jerusalem, where the old temple was located, Herod's temple, there's a wailing wall. That's the foundation to the temple. There is more than one stone upon another. I don't know where in hell Billy Graham got his education, but just listening to Jesus tell his disciples that when you hear of wars and rumors of wars, don't be distressed. Don't let that bother you. Tain't time yet. It's coming, but it ain't quite here yet. And he said, if you can see two rocks in this temple on top of each other, tain't gonna happen. Tain't gonna happen. Now that rock wall is coming down, kids. And when that rock wall comes down, now you need to get real serious real fast. Get real serious real fast. Now, you know, you can sit back and relax and wait. And as time progresses along, you'll have your houses foreclosed on. You'll have economic distress. You're going to go broke, be bankrupt, lose your job. And you're going to have a lot of very stressful events transpire that you could avoid, you know, if you put your mind to it, but you probably won't. Now, when those events transpire, you will remember this program. You will remember this lunatic that you listened to years ago, and you'll say to yourself, oh, I remember that crazy guy. What was his name again? Moses? Gordon? And then at that point in time, when you see some invading army come in there and knock down all of those rocks on that wailing wall, boy, that's time to get real serious real fast. You need a deathbed repentance real quick. If, in fact, you could pull the fat out of the fire at that late date. Now, I don't know. There comes a point in time, it kind of reminds me of my old daddy, see. It kind of reminds me that there comes a point in time when there isn't anything that you're going to do that's going to prevent what's going to happen. And my dad was like that, and he just kind of come unhinged and go ballistic on me. He'd whip off his belt, and he'd go to work on me. And God, there was just pain and belt and tears and wailing and weeping and gnashing of teeth going on as I was writhing on the floor. And there wasn't anything you could say. Okay, Dad, I'll go mow the grass. Okay, Dad, I'll go wash the dishes. Okay, Dad, I'll go make my bed. See, there was a point in time when the old man just got to the end of the line, and that was it. And it didn't make any difference what I was going to promise to do. The fact that it hadn't been done yet was enough. Now, kids, you haven't been performing on this contract. And you need to perform on the contract if you're going to avoid these penalties. That's all I'm telling you. You know, it's just one or the other. I don't care what you do. I don't care if you get whipped. I can sit over here and watch my brother Jimmy get the hell knocked out of him. I don't care as long as the old man ain't whipping on me. I can watch Jimmy get whipped. This little Georgie that I got real concerned about getting whipped. And that's what I'm concerned about here. I'm real concerned about little Georgie. I'm really not too concerned about you, but I thought I'd share it with you just in case you were interested. Now, in verse 64, he says, I'm going to scatter you among all people. Now, that's national captivity. That's slavery. In verse 65, among these nations shall you find no ease, neither shall the sole of your foot have any rest, but the Eternal your God shall give you there a trembling heart and failing of eyes and sorrow of mind. That national captivity is going to be so nasty you'll wish you were dead. And your life shall hang in doubt before you, and you shall fear day and night, and you shall have no assurance of your life. I can't think of anything that's more apropos than Auschwitz or Buchenwald. Those Jews that were there said they didn't know if they were going to live or die from day to day. Some of the guys that were picking up the bodies testified at Nuremberg. They said, we didn't know from day to day if it was going to be our turn the next day or the day after. You know, they didn't kill them all. There were some survivors, but, you know, they didn't know from one day to the next if they were going to live. Now, there's a prophecy. Now, the Jews, see, you Jews, you got yours. World War II, that was your punishment. You got whipped. You got whipped hard. It was bad. I don't see that you Jews have done much to heal the breach of this contract over here. We're not, by the way, we're not talking about the New Testament and Jesus now. We're talking about Moses. Moses. Don't forget that. Now, the rest of us got off pretty easy. World War II, you know, we got through the war. We had a little problem, you know, getting gasoline and tires, and, you know, we had some rationing going on. We only got a pound of meat a week or a month or something like that. I forgot now. But we got through it, and we didn't die, and we weren't sent to concentration camps. But our turn's coming up. So if that bothers you Jews out there, just remember that our turn's coming. We're going to get ours. You Muslims over there, you're concerned about how we've oppressed you people over there. Take solace in the fact that our God is just about to come down on us with both feet. We're not getting away with it. What we have done to you people around the world, you know, what we've done, we're going to get paid back in spades. Now, there's a few of us over here, not very many, but maybe 7,000 or maybe 70,000. That'll escape that. And you might be one of them. But if I was you, I don't think I would wait until the last minute. You know, be smarter than that. When you see these events transpiring, you know, wake up to reality and say, well, you know, I probably pushed the old man about as far as I'm going to push him. Do I want to risk pushing him once more? Pushing him once more. Because at some point in time, you know, you push the old man and he gets up off the couch. By God, when my old man got up off the couch, there wasn't any salvation from that point on. Long as he was laying on the couch, you know, threatening you and telling you, if you don't do this or don't do that, you know, here's what I'm going to do. Here's what I'm going to do. Now, here in the Bible, you got all these dire warnings. Here's what I'm going to do. Here's what I'm going to do. And the old man's laying on the couch, and he hasn't done it now for 2,000 years. And as long as he's laying on the couch, we're all right. But the sucker's going to get up and go ballistic on us now. And then when this guy gets up off the couch, I'm afraid deathbed repentance probably isn't going to work well for him. Verse 67, he says, in the morning, you're going to say, well, would God that it were even. And at even, you're going to say, well, would God that it was morning. For the fear of your heart wherewith you shall fear, and for the sight of your eyes which you shall see, and the eternal shall bring you into Egypt again with ships by the way whereof I spoke unto you. You shall see it no more again, and there you shall be sold unto your enemies for bondsmen and bondwomen, and no man shall buy you. No man's going to buy you. Governments are going to buy you. You're going to be sold into slavery. Now that's what we've got coming, and that's what we're going to get. Now there's a methodology for avoiding that and evading that. Let me describe it to you. There was a guy by the name of Abraham one time. He's minding his business, doing his thing, and three guys came into his yard. And one of them's name was Melchizedek. Today we call him Jesus. Well, you Christians, you call him Jesus. At that time his name was Melchizedek. And he had two angels with him, Michael and Gabriel. Two angels, three of them. And he said to him, he said, well, where are you going? And they said, well, we're on our way to Sodom and Gomorrah. And he said, well, why don't you sit down, let's have lunch. And so they sat down and they killed a calf and they barbecued it up and they were eating and drinking milk and eating meat at the same time, which a lot of people say you're not supposed to do, but, you know, God, he drinks milk and eats meat at the same time. And Abraham asked him, he said, where are you going? Sodom and Gomorrah. What are you going to do when you get there? He says, I'm going to nuke them both. Now, Abraham was really shocked at that. He said, you're going to nuke them both. He had a nephew over there by the name of Lot. And Lot had a wife and a couple of girls and you know, family lived over there. Abraham lived about 35 miles from downtown Sodom and Gomorrah. 35 miles. Abraham had 318 servants. Abraham had all of the land that he could see from the top of Mount Moriah. Somewhere around 4,000 square miles. And he had a lot of cattle and sheep. Now, if I had 300 guys, I'd have about 100 head of cattle for each man. He had about 31,000 head of cattle. Now, if I had 31,000 head of cattle, or if you had 31,000 head of cattle, you would probably have a slaughterhouse in downtown Sodom. And you'd probably have some Stuart Anderson restaurants, and you'd probably have some office buildings. Abraham was making, in today's dollars, about $5 million a year net. Netting about $5 million a year. Now, he'd been doing this for a number of years, 25 or 30, and my guesstimate is that he probably had in the neighborhood of $50 million at this juncture of time. $50 million. Abraham's about 90 years old. No, he was about 100. His wife was about 90. And a strange conversation enveloped. Abraham asked God, asked Melchizedek. He said, what if there's 50 righteous over there? What if there's 50 righteous people in Sodom and Gomorrah? Would you destroy those 50 righteous people with the wicked? Think about that. If this guy Kim Il-sung launched a nuclear weapon against Los Angeles, California, what if there was 50 righteous in Los Angeles? Would God allow a nuclear bomb to fall on L.A., Chicago, New York, Philadelphia, if there was 50 righteous in the city? Well, God mulled that over a little bit. It was a hard question. And he said, no. I wouldn't destroy Sodom and Gomorrah. If there's 50 righteous in Sodom, I'll spare both cities for the sake of the 50 righteous. The same God, by the way, is the same God that says, I'm the same yesterday, today, and forever. I change not, and I'm the God that cannot lie. You ever heard that? That's right. This is the same guy said, I'm the same yesterday, today, and forever. That's the doctrine of stare decisis. Stare decisis. Once settled, always settled. Abraham asked him a second question. He said, well, boss, what if we were short 5? Maybe there isn't 50, but what if there was 45? Would you destroy Sodom and Gomorrah for the sake of 45? And God mulled it over a little bit, and he said, no. If there was 45 over there, I wouldn't nuke them for 45. That sends a little signal to us. Says, well, Jesus, if there was 45 righteous in downtown Long Beach, would he allow Kim Il-sung to drop a nuke on Long Beach? God said, no, I'd preserve that city if there's 45. Abraham went on. He says, what about 40, 35, 30, 25, 20, 15, 10? He got down to 10. He said, would you destroy Sodom and Gomorrah if there was 10 righteous in the city? God said, no. If there was 10 righteous in the city, I wouldn't destroy it. Hell, I think he could have sold it for 5 if he would have moved on one more time. Well, what about 5? But he stopped at 10. They went over to Sodom and Gomorrah, and they could find 4. Lot, his wife, and 2 daughters. 4. So they took Lot and his wife and the 2 daughters out of Sodom and Gomorrah. Took them out of there. And saved them alive, and then nuked Sodom and Gomorrah. And Jesus said, if the people of Sodom and Gomorrah had seen what you people have seen when he was there talking to them, they would have repented in sackcloth and ashes. But of course they were ignorant and didn't know. Boys and girls living in Los Angeles, boys and girls, you living in New York, if there was 10 righteous. Now let's see what the size of the city was. Josephus says there was 100,000 living there. Modern preachers today says there are about 10,000. I don't know. I wasn't there. I got on the scene in 1939. How in the hell do I know? So I just take the numbers that these boys give us and I say to myself, well, there's 300 million people living in the United States. If here in the United States of America, if we could find, 10 righteous out of each 100,000 people in the land, 10 righteous out of 100,000, on average, throughout the nation, God says, I wouldn't destroy that place for the sake of those 10. Well, let's see. How many hundred thousands are there in 300 million? And I'll plug in 300 million here and divide that by 100,000. And that looks like 3,000. Doesn't it? Times 10. You gotta have 10s, that'd be 300,000. Boys and girls, if there was 300,000 Americans who obeyed God and kept His commandments, God would not destroy the United States of America for the sake of those 300,000. If there's 30,000 righteous in Australia, He'd preserve the whole nation for you Australians. Now just ask yourself, do you think you're going to find 30,000 Australians, 30,000 Canadians, or 300,000 Americans that obey God and keep His commandments in 2006? Do you believe that there's that many in your country? Because if there isn't, then the only other alternative for you is that you better be one of those 4 that gets led out of the city. Now, the other day I mentioned that to you, down there in New Orleans. And I said, somebody's going to write me a letter and they're going to say, do you mean to tell me that if I had the 10 commandments on my gatepost and Hurricane Katrina hit New Orleans, and your house next door gets flooded, my house wouldn't get flooded, and we're both 20 feet below sea level? And I said, son, I wouldn't be in New Orleans. In fact, my gut reaction would say, you know, maybe you ought to be thinking about leaving Los Angeles, Philadelphia, or New York before you have to leave like Lot and his wife with the clothes on your back and you lose your business, your house, and everything that's in your city. I remember a guy years ago told me down in New Orleans, I was down there doing some schools, and I went out to this guy's house, and he was on a cul-de-sac, and we walked out, and I was standing in his front yard. And as I was standing in his front yard, a ship went by. And I looked at that, and I was looking up at a ship. Up. I was looking up at a ship behind this levee. And I said to this guy, I said, what in the hell is that? Well, you can imagine a fool like me, you know, coming from the mountains. I'm standing down here in this hole looking up, and a ship is going by. He says, that's the Mississippi River. I said, we are below the Mississippi River. He said, yeah. He said, look at that levee. That levee is 20 feet above where we're standing. I said, oh my God. I said, and you live here? How long have you lived here? I couldn't believe it when I saw it. I walked up on that levee and I looked out there and I said, this is insane. Why would anybody in his right mind want to live here? Well, you know, you people down there in New Orleans, you know, you were born there and you think that's normal. You people in New York, you were born there, you think that's normal. You people in Los Angeles believe that living the way you do is normal. That's not the way God designed the program. That's not what the contract terms call for. That's not what our deal is all about. And now, there are some penalties that come down for not following the deal, not following the contract. My suggestion is, why don't you alert yourself to the terms and conditions and ask yourself, well, maybe there's a better way of life out here, you know? Maybe there's life after Los Angeles. Shucks, maybe I could make a living outside of New York City. I do. I can live outside of New Orleans. And you people want to rebuild New Orleans? You want to rebuild? I just told you the other day, I said, you know, he said to you, I'm going to punish you 7 times more. Do you people down in New Orleans, honest to God, believe that you learned anything from Hurricane Katrina? I haven't seen anything, any evidence that you people down there in New Orleans have learned jack squat. I think you're going to go on doing just exactly what you have been doing in the past. And you're going to continue doing it in the future, and there's going to be more Hurricane Katrinas, and they're going to get 7 times worse than the last one. I cannot imagine 7 times worse, but that's what he told you. He said, I'm going to lean on you 7 times. I'll punish you 7 times more for your sins, if that's what it's going to take. So why don't you mull that over and remember that if you're one of those 7,000 that Elijah, you know, was a part of, you can be spared from this. And if you're like that, those 4 guys in Sodom and Gomorrah, Lot and his wife and 2 daughters, you can be spared from this. But you got to be practicing this law. You cannot be in breach of contract. Yeah, I'm out of time again. We'll finish this up next time. I'll show you what Jesus had to say next time. Hey, you've been listening to the Law Hour and Editorial Review, sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States, worldwide over the Internet. If you'd like more information about the Law School and the Law Hour, please go to our website at georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. The Law School is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school that is open to individuals by prearrangement. Now, the Law Hour is carried worldwide over the Internet. All of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date for your listening convenience, and the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. Time's up. I got to leave it right there. We'll see you back here tomorrow night, same time, same station. God willing, of course. Until then, thanks for listening, everyone, and good night, friends.